Back in November of 2023, Ian Hershey Alley wrote an article for Unheard titled, "Why I Am Now a Christian." This article sent shockwaves through the intellectual world because Alley, a leading intellectual, had been a strong proponent of the new atheism for the better part of 20 years. New atheism was a version of the old atheism, but what made it new was its aggressiveness as it displayed its contempt for religion. It wasn't simply that a religious point of view was wrong, as the old atheists had previously argued, but rather that religion was dangerous and a hugely destructive force to the human condition. And the new atheism is often thought to have started with the publishing in 2006 of Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion. I gotta, just so you can follow along there should be a slide there, yeah. This is the book that started it all off. And then in the same year, Sam Harris published a book called A Letter to a Christian Nation. And the aim of this book, Harris says, was to demolish the intellectual and moral pretensions of Christianity in its most committed forms. Also in 2006, Daniel Dennett published his book, Breaking the Spell, Religion as a Natural Phenomenon. A year later, Christopher Hitchens published his book, God is Not Great, Why Religion Poisons Everything. And in 2007, Dawkins, Harris, Dennett, and Hitchens met in person in Washington, D.C. for a private two-hour conversation that was videotaped. And later, this videotape was published under the title The Four Horsemen, an allusion to the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And they became known as the Four Horsemen of New Atheism. They were the leading public faces and the voices of this new atheism that had taken hold in the culture. And what's interesting is that Ian Hershey Alley was scheduled to be at that meeting in 2007, but she couldn't make it. And she's sometimes called the fifth horseman because of her strident anti-religious tone. Now, you may never have heard of Ian Hershey Alley. I know some of you had, but can I assume that most of you have never heard of her? Fair to say? And you probably maybe have never heard of New Atheism either, for that matter. But I can tell you the voice of New Atheism has had an enormous impact on our culture today for the past 20 years. It has deeply influenced the way people understand religion. It's one of the reasons why so many young and middle-aged people today are hostile to religion in our culture. Ian Hershey Alley was born as a Muslim in Somalia. Her family had to flee to Kenya because of the violence in Somalia. As a teenager, she became very involved in the Muslim Brotherhood, a very fundamentalist form of Islam. But in 1992, she fled to the Netherlands to avoid an arranged marriage. She obtained a master's degree at a German university in political science. And in 2003, Ali ran for parliament in the Netherlands, and she got elected as an MP. And over this time, she became very disillusioned with Islam in particular and religion generally speaking. And ultimately, because of her anti-Muslim and her anti-religious activity, she had death threats made against her in the Netherlands, and she had to flee to the United States for personal safety, where she's lived ever since. Ali is a significant intellectual voice in the West today, and her conversion to Christianity in November of 2023 represents a huge intellectual shift, not only for herself, but also for our culture. And I want to show you an interview on video that Ali did for Unheard as she followed up on her article, Why I Am Now a Christian. In the first part of the discussion that you're not going to hear, Ali discusses her intellectual reasons for her conversion to Christianity, but where we start the clip, the conversion switches to her personal reasons. So let's take a listen.
So then the message, I suppose, is that you are still a liberal as well as a Christian. Is that fair?
That's very much fair. And say that liberalism is rooted in Christianity.
A lot of people were also questioning what appeared to be a more of a sort of practical way of making your faith decisions. That was very discussed. I mean, the article has been read many hundreds of thousands of times already since Friday, and no doubt will continue to be. But I did notice that as a common response, which is, it felt like a justification or a discussion of Christianity as a mechanism to resist cultural collapse, almost. Mm-hmm. And there was not so much of a personal journey, not so much about your own faith. Is there anything that you would expand on there?
The reason why I care, first of all, you have, you know, a limit on the number of words that you want to publish on her. and I'm expanding this into a book, but yes, there's a very personal story. I don't know to what extent it's useful, but on a very personal level, I went through a period of crisis, very personal crisis of fear, anxiety, depression. I went to the best therapists money can pay. I think they gave me an explanation of some of the things that I was struggling with, but I continued to have this big spiritual hole or need, as you call it. I tried to self-medicate. I tried to sedate myself. I drank enough alcohol you could use to sterilize a hospital. It would not, nothing helped. I continued to read, you know, books on psychiatry and the brain, and none of that helped. All of that explained a small piece of the puzzle, but there was still something that I was missing. And then I think it was one therapist who said to me early this year, "I think, Ayan, you're spiritually bankrupt." And at that point, I was in a place where I had sort of given up hope. I was in this place of darkness, and I thought, well, what the hell? I'm going to open myself to that and see, you know, ask her, what are you talking about? Mm. And we started talking about faith and a belief in God. And I explained to her that the God I grew up with was a horror show. He created you to punish you and frightened you. And, you know, as a girl and as a woman, you're just a piece of trash. And so I said to her, I explained to her why I didn't believe in God, and more than that, why I actually hated God. And then she asked me to design my own God. And she said, if you had the power to, you know, attribute a higher power, if you had the power to make your own God, what would you do? And as I was going on, I thought, yeah, right. That's actually a description of Jesus Christ and Christianity at its best. And so instead of inventing yet another new God, I started diving into that story. And so far, you know, my husband and I went about, both of us saying we're atheists, and now it's, I like this story, I exploit, and the more I look at it, the more I don't want to say I'm fulfilled, but I feel I no longer have this need, this void, I have to say, and I feel like I'm going somewhere.
The God that she was imagining, she said, was actually a description of Jesus Christ and Christianity at its best. Seems to me the whole point of Trillium is to powerfully follow Jesus Christ and to live out Christianity his way at its very best. But how do we do that? There's a phrase that Peter uses in our reading today that I find interesting. He says, love one another deeply from the heart. That word deeply, that gets translated deeply, could be translated also as fervently, zealously, intensely. And the word love in this phrase is agape in Greek. And agape, as I've mentioned to you many times, is not an easy word to translate. because Greek has five words for love, English only has one. Agape is the one word for love in Greek that's a mystery. It's a mystery for us because it was a mystery for the Greek themselves. They had a word for love that they didn't fully understand. They didn't have a clear understanding of its meaning. That makes it hard for us to translate it into English, especially when we only have one word for love. And yet, this word agape is the primary word for love in the New Testament. What do you make of that? The New Testament is only one of a handful of ancient writings from that world that uses agape as its primary word for love. And all the other examples that feature agape are Christian writings, early Christian writings that follow in the New Testament's footsteps. Personally, I think this means that we're talking about a love today that's not part of our normal human experience. Agape has this notion of a transcendent love, a love that's focused completely on giving itself away, not part of the human transactions that we know well. And it seems to me that the more we live out the mystery of this love called agape, the closer we get to the heart of Jesus. And the closer we get to living out his way, which we call Christianity at its very best. And what Peter is saying to the church or churches that he's writing to today is that they are to love each other with a giving itself away kind of love, this agape love, and they are to do it in an intensely personal way. What do you think it would feel like to experience that love in a church? What would it be like? You know, Trillium's a friendly church. It's a church of mutual affection. There's a lot of affection in this church. But it seems to me we're still quite a ways far from what Peter has as a vision for us of the kind of love we could be sharing with each other today to this morning. A love that gives itself away to others. This kind of love, what would it feel like if we were to make this the hallmark of what it means to be part of the Trillium family of faith? Like to love one another in the manner that Peter is talking about, I think this is a supernatural event because it's really a supernatural love. I don't think you can love other people in the manner that Peter is describing for those churches long ago. I don't think it's possible to love that just from ourselves. It's just not in us. This kind of love comes from somewhere else, it seems. Sometimes in our special relationships, we get close to this type of love in a moment or two with, you know, people we love dearly in our own ways. We get close to this agape notion of love. We can draw close to love at its very best, but we can't stay there very long. At least we don't seem to manage to stay there very long. The kind of love that Peter's talking about, this intense agape, is of a different order altogether. It's a kind of love that can endure in our relationships with each other, not flit in and flit out at random. And I think it's this kind of love, this agape love that Ion Hershey Alley was missing during her time of trial. It's this divine love that was missing, and no amount of therapy can resolve this need in us. There's no earthly teaching that can meet the needs of our hearts today. Nothing else in this world can truly satisfy what our hearts long for in our deepest places. And imagine you're Ion Hershey Alley and you walk into a church for the first time, and as you move into the worship space, you notice this kind of unrestrained, intense agape love being shared between people. What would that feel like to her? And not only do you watch this kind of love being shared between people who obviously know each other, but amazingly, this agape love is also being offered to you, a first-timer. What do you suppose this kind of experience would feel like? We'd probably have to say, don't know. And you're right, because most of us don't know what this kind of love feels like, what this agape love is really like in our human experience. How many churches live out this kind of love as a common practice within themselves? And I'd have to say, I don't know any. We talked last week about life passage events, situations and circumstances that in some way change who we are in a fundamental sense. They impact our identity, our sense of self. I could give you a million scenarios that could potentially be a life passage event for people, where something happens and our sense of self is changed because of it. If you come into contact with this kind of love, the love that Peter's talking about, and you come into contact with it for the first time, I can promise you that you would be in a life passage moment. In a love-parched world where the free-flowing love of God seems hard to find, it would be a life-changing experience to be touched by this agape love that's so freely and effortlessly given between people. It would change your whole orientation towards life. In my own personal walk, I've been working hard at stepping down from my throne in my daily life. You know that throne I've been talking about on and on about? You're probably tired of hearing about it. There's me on my throne, right? I've used the throne as an analogy, as a way of describing the practice of our lives in a relationship with Jesus Christ and in our relationship with each other. And for those few of you who don't know what I'm talking about, there's this authority seat in our lives, and the question is, who sits on this authority seat? Who sits on the throne of your life? You or God? Or in my case, me or God? As I say, you've probably gotten tired of me talking about it, but I'm right in the middle of it today. This is the cutting edge of my spiritual life. Because in my own spiritual walk, I'm trying to take the idea and put it into reality. Every day, multiple times, I'm saying, okay, Jesus, I'm stepping down. I stop and I feel myself stepping down. I feel myself yielding in a certain kind of way, and then I say, okay, Lord, please step up. Take control, take the wheel. And many times, I would say most of the times, only a few seconds later, I'm back in charge again. It only lasts for a second or two, then I'm back in charge. It's amazing how this happens, how fast it can happen. In a blink of an eye, I've already overturned what I asked Jesus to do. I've stepped back up on my own throne. But then I'm saying now, okay, Lord, I'm stepping down again. Please take control. And I'm doing this 20, 50, 100 times a day. Whenever I can remember. And I'm remembering more often, thankfully. More and more I'm remembering, and it's happening more and more often, and the spaces are a little bit longer now. I was coming to Trillium on Thursday, and my neighbor across the street, he was just finishing shoveling his driveway. Another of our neighbors had told Sally and me that this neighbor who was shoveling his driveway, the one who was across the street from us, his 42-year-old daughter died in December. And Sally and I had many times over the past few weeks said that we got to get a sympathy card and take it over to him. Because losing a child is a really brutal experience. It's a life passage event for many people. Losing a daughter or a son, it's an identity transforming event. And Sally and I knew this, and yet we never got the card to him. So I'm out, and I come out and I see him putting his shovel away as he's just finishing his driveway. The garage door's open, he's just putting the shovel in his garage. And I don't want to engage. I've lived across the street from this guy for 10 years. I don't know his name. I've never talked to him once. And in fact, he seems to want to avoid me. Like he turns away from me when I kind of look over towards him. So for that reason, I don't really even like him, even though I don't really know him. I just want to get into my car and drive away. But in that moment, as I'm getting towards my car, I say, Lord, I want to step down. I'm going to step down here. I'm stepping down. Please step up. And I feel myself yielding in a certain kind of way, and I'm saying to myself, Jesus, just take control. Take the wheel, please. And something shifted for me in that moment. I think Jesus sat on my throne. And I put my work stuff in the back seat of the car, and I walked across the street and up my neighbor's driveway. And he saw me coming, and he turned to face me. And when I got close to him, I said, I want to extend my condolences for the death of your daughter. And he nodded to me. And then we talked for a moment or two about it. But what does one really say? And then I introduced myself. I said, I don't think I've ever introduced myself to you. My name's Mark. And he introduced himself to me. His name's Bruce. Didn't know that. And he thanked me for coming over. That was it. And then I walked back across the street to my car, got in, and drove away. And as I was driving away, I thought the easiest thing to do in the whole wide world is to love your neighbor. Whoever that might be in the moment. It's the easiest thing to do in the whole wide world, and yet it's the hardest thing to do as well. It's easy and it's hard. When Jesus is sitting on your throne, when he's on the authority seat of your life, when he has control of the wheel, it's so simple and easy to love your neighbor because the love flows so effortlessly. Why? Because God is love. And when the God of love sits on your authority seat, what else can you do but love? It's not just any kind of love that's being offered through us either. You get to love others with the most amazing love you could ever imagine, this agape love, love at its very best. Peter says in chapter 1, verse 23, he says, "For you have been born again, anagenao," which means a new birth, which means a birth from above, a higher birth, a heavenly birth, a spiritual birth. A regenerating seed has been planted in you that brings out the image of God that lies dormant in you. Some mainline Christians see the idea of being born again as a pejorative, something to be sneered at or treated with contempt. But that is most unfortunate. We say the same thing in our own words at Trillium, to awaken the Christ light in each other and shine it in the world. That means to be born again. If the Christ light wakes up in you, you are born again. Promise. The imperishable seed is awake and alive in you. When we allow God's consciousness to wake up in us, when we allow our bodies to become vessels we allow God's holy light, the Holy Spirit, that agape love to shine through us, then something fundamental has changed for us, and we have moved into the world of life passages, and we are reborn with a new identity, promise. I don't think enough of you take this seriously. It's easy to make our mission into a platitude, to awaken the Christ light in each other and shine it in the world. That could easily become a platitude. I take it very literally. There is a real Christ light. There is a real resurrecting power of God's love. It's called the Holy Spirit, and she wants to come alive in us, wake up in us. But how do you suppose the Christ light is going to wake up in you and me and shine out into that world if we're sitting on our thrones in our heavy earthly way, if we're committed to living out our own lives today in through our perishable nature, from our own sensibility? It's not going to happen. We're called to follow Jesus and to live out Christianity, his way at its very best. And that only happens when God reigns in us and his agape love is alive and free in us. That is what it means to live from the imperishable seed God has planted in us. So I have an idea for you today, an encouragement. Something short of a command, but more than just a suggestion. I want you to begin yielding yourself to Jesus in your daily walk. Say to yourself, "I'm stepping down in this moment, Lord, so that you can step up. I want you to take charge, Lord. I want you to take the wheel." Just try that. Keep that simple practice going through your day. Do it 20 times, 50 times, 100 times, however many times it takes for it finally to start taking effect in you. You keep yielding yourself to the Lord again and again and again and again and again through the day, and watch and see over the days and weeks what happens to you. If enough of us did this over a long period of time, we'd become that agape love community. We really would. We'd become that agape love community. We would be living out the gospel in its best form. And when people came to us, new people, maybe even someone like Ian Hershey Ali, someone who was hungry and thirsty for God, they would experience Christianity, Jesus' way, at its very best. And why would we want to offer God or them anything less?